Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 338, recorded on August 18th, 2017. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, and it's always great to get to hang out with you, Michael.
Yeah, and Adam Christensen's also here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Great.
Well, kind of.
Well, that I mean...
I think all things considered, you're doing really great.
Yeah, I just, this whole Drobo field drive thing is bumming me out.
That's surprising that happened.
Yeah, I mean, it's a freak thing. Whatever happened. I've had drives go out and you just swap them out and the Drobo does its thing. But something happened with the, when it went to data protection mode. And obviously I wasn't around to see what happened, but somehow it borked itself. So
what's the solution? So it didn't do the thing it was supposed to do. And you can fix it,
and then something went wrong. So during the sort of switchover to data protection mode, it something corrupted, and basically, it still needs data from the failed drive. So I have to block level clone the drive that failed from the bad drive to a new drive, and then sort of put everything back together.
Oh, that sucks.
That sounds frightening.
Yeah, and I'm doing it mainly as an experiment, because the reality is I'm a backup freak, as most people know, and everything that was on this Drobo is actually backed up in two other places. It's just I don't want to have to go recover all that, so I'd rather just like let this block level clone happen in the background and see if this works, because okay, then I can do other things while that's doing that, rather than having to go like to all the other places where this data is and sort of recollect it back onto the Drobo, if that makes sense. Like, I don't want to reset mm-hmm. the whole thing, just because that is active time where I'd have to be actively doing it, where if this works, this is just something that can run in the background. But block level cloning 3 terabytes of data turns out takes about 80 hours or so. So
yeah, that's lots of fun.
Yeah, so it should be done by Monday.
And this is Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk about some iOS related stuff. It's been 2 weeks, but the HomePod firmware is the gift that keeps on giving and giving and giving and giving.
I'm calling it Apple's number one leaker.
This is
not going to reflect well on the HomePod firmware's next employee evaluation.
Exactly. He's lucky he didn't get fired yet.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah. So regarding Apple TV, it seems to have revealed, so there's Apple TV stuff with 4K, which I think we've been talking about, HDR. So there are mentions of 4K video and Dolby Vision and HDR10 color formats for high dynamic range video, which sounds very Apple, and I think that's kind of a given. That's going to happen for the next Apple TV.
I don't know if it sounds like it. Very Apple. I mean, Apple's late to the party in a lot of people's opinions, but yeah, it's just the next evolution.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know that I'm still using a 32-inch 720p television from 2007.
Yeah, that's the thing, is people don't update their TVs very frequently. And I've asked a lot of people about this. Obviously, there's people who are on the high end that already have the 4K set and are ready to go. But I think, again, why Apple is, quote unquote, you know, behind is that Apple recognizes like the idea that, well, we want to sell a product to the largest number of people, and they're just there have not been that many people yet that have made the transition to 4K.
Yeah, but 4K is not a big deal. It's really like I want to watch Netflix on my TV and play Crossy Road occasionally.
Right. And we're getting to that point. 4K televisions are coming down. I think I've seen them on Amazon now from some vendors for around $500, and I think that's kind of the tipping point.
Wow.
We're not talking name brand ones, but ones with pretty decent reviews if you get them on a special. And we're also not talking about like 60, 65 inch TVs. We're talking about smaller ones. But the point is like when my the one that I have ultimately breaks, or Michael, when the one you have ultimately breaks, probably the reality will be 4K will just be what sort of the standard is. Like you probably won't even be able to walk in and get a TV that's not 4K.
I think that's probably when people buy a TV. They either buy a new TV if the one they have breaks, or if they move to a place that has like a different arrangement and you want a larger set.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah,
and that doesn't even address the whole 4K content issue, which is there's not a lot of 4K content available, although obviously it's looking like Apple's prepping to change that, at least when it comes to iTunes content. And then the other thing I think a lot of people aren't thinking about from the streaming side of things is the data caps that most plans in the United States at least have on them.
Do they?
I keep forgetting.
Is that, I mean, I know that Comcast flirted with that several years ago, but I thought they backed out.
They're high, but they're there. I mean, I think Cox, you know, I ran into it when Netflix went to HD. I think we talked about that on this. Mine was at 300 gigabytes a month, and then there was a 400 gigabyte cap. I think they're now at 1 terabyte.
Hmm.
So yeah,
that sounds right, because that's what my Comcast data cap is. It's a terabyte.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is when you're transitioning from HD to 4K, that's a 4X increase in bandwidth. So, you know,
the new video format that Apple's supporting in iOS 11 and macOS High Sierra, that helps with that.
That will help with that. So, yeah, I mean, that is changing as well. So I think that's all these things together are saying that it's time for Apple to go 4K with the Apple TV. And it's looking like it is going to require new hardware for folks who are thinking they're just going to get a software update to their fourth gen.
Oh.
I wouldn't bank on that.
Yeah, I was going to ask. No, okay, so if I got one of these new Apple TVs on my 720p television, I could probably benefit from the HDR stuff, right?
I don't know, because your display probably doesn't have the gamma to even show that.
Mm.
I would assume. Okay. Jeff may know more about this than I do.
Yeah, I think it depends on your television.
Okay,
but
as a rule of thumb, I would assume no, you're not going to see any dramatic improvement in anything.
But your iPad Pro and your Retina screens are ready to go for that content, I think.
Gotcha. What do you guys think about that rumor, those quote-unquote leaked photos of the Apple television set?
Fakety fake, 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 fake. Holy crap.
Yeah, I didn't throw it in. It actually wasn't in the show notes, but...
It is Benjamin Geskin, first of all.
Oh, it was Geskin that leaked it?
Yes.
Okay.
Am I the only one that's kind of meh about Benjamin Geskin?
Okay, I mean...
He's gotten some stuff right, so that's the only thing. It's like,
yeah,
people are feeding him stuff from some legitimate sources. Not all of them, but I think there's some legitimate sources coming through him. So he's somebody to watch.
And I think some of the stuff that he's posting as original, other people posted it first.
Well, all that stuff comes through Weibo or Weibo or whatever it's called. Weibo.
Let's go with Weibo. This Apple TV leak, no way.
So the only thing that I can see is I don't know how he's figuring out the size, because that leak was saying, oh, it's a 60 inch. It's basically a flat panel screen with an obvious Apple logo on the back of it. It's blurry. So there's that.
So you know it's real.
Well, yeah. So that adds legitimacy. But it looks like it's in a testing lab or a testing facility. Could be an R&D facility, wherever it might be. So there's, in my mind, there's two possible things that this could be. One, it's just an R&D thing, And, you know, Apple, it's pretty well known, I think, that Apple has toyed around with the idea of a television. And
I have a different, it's a two possible thing take on this.
So, and the second thing I thought of is it's not really 60 inches, it's 30 or 36 or something like that, and it's the Apple Pro Display.
So, all right, I like your second idea better.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my two takes on it. Someone put an Apple sticker on some prototype thing in a lab and took a picture. Someone photoshopped an Apple logo onto some prototype thing in a lab and took a picture. It's not an Apple product, and Apple is not going to have a product in their labs, that a prototype that actually has a frickin' Apple logo on it.
Good point.
I suppose that's possible.
But unless it's not a prototype, it's a Pro Display getting ready for being tested and getting ready to go into production, or in production already.
That would be possible, and it's not 60 inches if it is.
Correct.
So you're, would you say 37 inches?
What's a good size Pro Display right now? I would imagine it's larger than 30 inches at this point. So I was thinking like 34, 36.
I have a 34-inch curved display on my desk.
Yeah.
And it's awesome.
Yeah.
And if I went any bigger than this, okay, if I went any bigger than this, first it would start getting big enough that it would be awkward to look at the entire display. But if it did, we'd have to take the speakers off of this, which would be fine. And if I did that, this could be a 37-inch display.
Right. Yeah. So I think your third option is probably the most likely one, because it's the one that makes the most sense. But the only other realm of possibility I could come up with was that this is a shot of the Pro Display, because we know Apple has said they're going to make a Pro Display. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. They were very clear about that.
Okay. The other thing that came out of that HomePod firmware leak, we saw that the some mentions of Apple Watch with LTE capabilities, specifically referring to the SIM card,
mm-hmm.
or having a SIM. It's gizmo preserving SIM, I believe.
eSIM.
Yeah, so it's an embedded SIM where, you know, ostensibly you could change the, what would that, not the IMEI, probably something else. I think SIM is, I guess it's just SIM ID or something like that. Mm-hmm.
Doesn't Apple use some of these in some of the cellular iPads now?
They similar have, technology? They have that little Apple SIM, right?
Yeah.
Oh, is that an actual, about the Apple
that's
SIM.
Not a slot SIM or anything though, right? It's like embedded in the device,
no,
isn't it?
No, it's a little card.
Oh. Interesting.
Oh, I didn't realize it was a card. Okay, well, there you go.
Could they adapt that and solder it on?
Sure.
I'm sure they could. Yeah.
So yeah. Maybe it's that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's known as a removable SIM with remote provisioning. It's a special SIM card that may be configured with different operator profiles.
All right, yeah. But it won't be removable on the Apple Watch.
Right.
Right. So they could build, they could probably make that smaller and build it into...
Yes, if you take all the stuff that needs to be there to actually keep it in a card format, it's probably pretty tiny.
Totally.
I think we just need to get this right out there. This is not going to be a telephone on your wrist. You know, there's all kinds of people saying, "Oh, right. LTE on the Apple Watch. Now it's a phone." No, it is not. If they do this, it's not a phone. It'll be like the iPad, where you can have a data connection, but it's not a phone.
Right. I think Ming-Chi Kuo even said it would share the number from your, possibly share the number from your iPhone, which seems weird to me. But
I don't see how it could do that.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Okay.
So it would piggyback off. It would.
No, I know what you mean, Adam. What do you mean? Why wouldn't it be able to do that? I think that's perfectly reasonable.
then why don't we do that with iPads today?
Yeah, that's where I got
an iPad with too. Data has its own unique phone number. You can't call it, but it has a phone number.
Yeah, I mean, true.
So this would be kind of the same thing.
I think that technology is available. I think that ability is available.
It's not going to be a phone.
Okay. I wasn't
implying that by having a shared number, it would be a phone either. I wasn't trying to imply that. The only possibility, because it's going to be purely a data connection, is that maybe you can do VoIP. But I'm trying to find the Maccast where I looked this up, because another thing that baffled me for a long time about this when these rumors first started was why they would do LTE versus like 3G, because the data connection that you need in terms of the data that the watch is going to get delivered is little bits of data, right? This little updated bits of data, like weather data or whatever it might be. So why do you need an LTE fast connection? But there's some sort of subset of LTE that's like a lower power, I think. And I don't remember what it's called. I have it in notes from about a year ago, but I can't find them right now.
Let's call it low power LTE because it sounds good.
There is actually a name for it. So I'll keep digging maybe by the end of the show so I can give accurate information. But I just remembered that was going on. But, again, it seems like it would be cheaper to use like a 3G chipset, and also it would probably have less power issues. I guess the concern is that 3G maybe is going away at some point, like the 3G networks. And the other thing, just on that 3G side of things, another reason not to use it, or another reason to possibly use it, was I was also reading that because it's going to be LTE only, some carriers wouldn't be able to necessarily support it globally.
Hmm.
I can see where that's a problem. I mean, it wouldn't stop the watch from functioning. It would just stop it from being able to get data independently of your iPhone connection.
Well, yeah, and you wouldn't buy it, because the rumor is that it's going to still be available in two models. So just like the iPad, you'll have the Apple Watch Standard and then the Apple Watch Cellular. Which makes sense.
That makes a lot of sense. All right, so you guys going to get an Apple Watch with data?
No.
I don't think so. I guess it's going to depend on the cost, also the cost of service. You know, how much if the add-on service is like an iPad and it's $20 a month for my Apple Watch more? No way.
Yeah, absolutely not. I don't want to add more money. There's too many subscriptions in my life already.
I get that.
So
I suppose I should answer as well. And there would have to be something very compelling about getting the LTE model for me to do it. And to this day, I've never bought an LTE iPad because I've been able to tether my iPhone.
Right.
Yep. And I just don't see me using the watch without my phone around often enough that I would need to have a separate data connection for it.
I'm the same way. The only area where I'm kind of pissed about my Apple Watch is I can't do the known network thing with my Apple Watch.
I thought that was supposed to happen.
It should just be an automatic thing.
But it doesn't?
Well, here's the problem is that I'm like, I have a dual band router and I don't know why this doesn't work. So if someone can tell me what I'm doing wrong, because I'm sure it's some configuration that I've screwed up. But basically my main network, the one that I'm always connected to, is an AirPort Extreme. It's in the dual band mode. But I think, and I've tested this, I know this is happening because if I switch over my Mac or my iPhone and my watch to my guest network, which I think is forced onto 2.4 gigahertz, it works. But if my phone is connected to my primary network, which I'm always connected to, I think the issue is that it's in 5 gigahertz mode, and the Apple Watch, I don't think, will do 5 gigahertz. I think it's a 2.4 band only. But I don't know why it's not being smart enough to, like, process through the dual band.
Yeah. Okay. So let's move on to iOS 11. So we've seen some updates pushed out. So Apple released the fourth iOS 11 public beta, which corresponds to the, is it the sixth?
Fifth, I think they're on.
Okay. Fifth.
Fifth private beta.
Or there is the sixth.
Yeah, developer beta is six, public beta is five.
Yeah, so they are, they've ditched messages in iCloud. It seems like they're not going to do
that.
Yeah,
the iCloud messages is turned off for now.
Oh. They must just be having issues that they're trying to work through.
Well, hasn't it been disabled for the last two betas?
Maybe.
Well,
but still, it's disabled, but only temporary.
So we're not sure. Oh, you think it's temporary? There are some that think it's permanent.
I wish I could remember where I heard that it's definitely a temporary thing.
Okay.
Why would it be permanent? What's the theory behind that?
Because they can't make it work?
It's just syncing, right?
I mean, come on. There are so many things like that that are like, oh, it's just this, but then they realize it's too hard. I'm just saying, I want to see it, but it's possible we won't see it. So I'm just throwing it out there.
It wouldn't be that big a deal. I mean, control center. Like it is now.
Yeah.
Hey, Adam, just real quick, I went and double checked, and you are correct. Apple Watch Wi-Fi is at 2.4 gigahertz only.
Right, but I just don't know why my network's not smart enough to like figure it out. Yeah, that's the only weird.
That's
thing.
Weird.
Control center in this update has been improved primarily with a little AirPlay icon, so you can easily now, you know, switch your audio output, which is particularly important for people with AirPods. Because before it became a giant pain in the butt. You didn't get that little menu. So now they've added that back in, which is good. They've tweaked some icons. Wait,
where is that? Just so I know.
So in Control Center, when you flip up, and
right.
There's a little, the little wavy lines up in the upper right corner
Of the music
tile or whatever.
Tile, panel, clicklet, whatever.
But that's just a visual indicator, right? Am I wrong on that?
Well, you click it, and then it will let you select.
Okay, how is that different than how it was before?
There's an
animation with it. So if there are sources available, you're supposed to have the little radio wave things kind of light up.
I saw that last night when I was doing this, but, I mean, the way it was before, I had to basically force touch or hold touch on the, you know, bring up the music thing, and then I could switch my sources. This looks like it's just a visual indicator now, because now when I tap on that, it goes to that same interface.
I remember the first beta did not even have an option to switch. So I guess it's just a nice little visual indicator.
I want the button back. Why can't we just have like a and what's that? Because that's all run through the Air AirPlay.
Through AirPlay.
Yeah. So like we had like just a little AirPlay drop down in the existing Control Center. Why can't we just have that back?
That's a really good question.
Why is it buried one level deeper?
And why, to this day, can we still not tap on the Wi-Fi button, do a tap and hold, and see all the frickin' networks, including the one we're connected to?
That seems useful. Why don't we have that? I want that.
And same thing for Bluetooth.
And I'll also say in iOS 11, it bugs the heck out of me that they moved the... what's the color changing mode called? I'm blanking on it now.
Night shift?
Yeah, they moved night shift in under the stupid brightness selector. The toggle for that.
But I never toggle that. They probably have metrics on how often.
Oh yeah, I see that now. Yep. I'm playing on my iPad mini right now.
Yes.
And did a tap and hold and there's night shift. Well, at least the button size for night shift is now appropriate.
Sorry. All right. Grumpy rant over. Stupid stuff, I know, and I'll learn to adapt. It's fine. But it's just like, I don't understand why we're taking things that were at an upper level and burying them now. I have a big problem with Apple's, what I call Apple's hidden UI direction, where they just
keep hiding things. Is it possible they moved those things because people weren't using?
Oh, I'm sure that's why. I'm sure they aren't used frequently enough. But the fact that they got moved, I had to spend all kinds of time like trying to figure out where everything went. And it's just annoying.
At least it hasn't turned into Snapchat.
At least there's that.
Where like the core demographic can't even figure out how to make things happen.
Yeah. So I recognize I'm a grumpy old man.
It's fine. Yeah. I mean, your Skype status is get off my lawn.
Yep.
So, which is good. You needed to update that.
Chasing the kids off my lawn. That's my Skype status.
I should make mine, I hate skateboards.
Yes, you should.
Not even the skateboarders, just the skateboards. Let's see. So yeah, public betas. They updated. They changed the App Store icon.
Oh,
Adam, how do you feel about that?
I'm fine with it.
I believe you.
So people, what you have missed are the rants that Adam has gone on in other chats. That
on Twitter, I think I said the day it happened, I'm like, WTF, you know, like, seriously, like, what the heck is going on with this popsicle thing? And, you know, at least in the past, it sort of had a reference to what it was with the little A with the paintbrush and the ruler and the pencil.
I thought it was more like little salami sticks.
Yeah, now they've abstracted it. Yeah, well, somebody made a sausage version of the icon already. I saw that.
They also updated the maps icon, so now it's going by
infinite loop. Well, and the thing with the App Store icon, you know, everybody got up in arms about that one, but nobody talked about the iTunes Store icon, which is even worse, in my opinion,
because we hadn't gotten that far yet.
It doesn't make any sense.
We were still ranting about the App Store icon.
Right. They moved it to just a star, and now it looks just like the iMovie icon.
iMovie, yeah. And yes, I know if you put them side by side, you can say, well, look, these are clearly different because, you know, with the iMovie icon, it's a darker purple and there's a little camera in the middle. But the bottom line is you're looking at a square with a star in it.
Right.
Yeah, that's lazy. It should be a frickin' music note.
Like, you mean like it was all the way up until this last beta?
Yeah.
It ends up being confusing for people. And when you take the... I get... simplification and abstraction can be good design, but another part of good design is being able to look at something and understand what it means or what it represents
without having to think about it every time.
If you don't have any prior knowledge or context, and I think that's the laurels that they're resting on, but I think that's bad design. I think that's not a good way to think about UI.
I agree completely.
So that's my only reaction to it. And again, we're all going to get used to it. It's all going to be fine. But my immediate reaction was outrage. We were talking about in another chat, Jeff and I brought up there's going to be this whole five stages of upgrade grief when you move to iOS 11. And it's going to go through all the phases, you know, starting out with anger and ultimately ending in, you know, acceptance.
Acceptance.
You mean apathy? So.
Apathy can be a form of acceptance.
but right before acceptance is depression, so.
Yeah. We haven't hit that point yet, Adam. we're still early in the process. I think we're around anger right now.
I think there's kind of a trying to understand phase, right? I can't remember all the steps, but I think I'm in that phase right now. Right now, it's mostly confusion is the emotion that I'm
Confusion's
feeling.
Definitely one of the stages.
and if it wasn't before, it is now.
Utter bewilderment.
I'm in confusion trying to come to understanding.
Yeah. All right, so we have a bunch of iPhone 8 rumors to talk about, but first I want to talk about our brand new sponsor, and I'm really excited about this, and it is Away.
I love those guys.
They're great.
Yeah.
So Away makes some awesome travel suitcases out of high-quality materials while offering a much lower price compared to other brands by cutting out the middleman and selling directly to you. You have the choice of 9 colors and 4 sizes, the carry-on, the bigger carry-on, the medium, or the large, which is perfect for extended stays. All suitcases are super lightweight and made with premium German polycarbonate, unrivaled in strength and impact resistance. The interior features a patent-pending compression system, which is great for overpackers. There's a TSA-approved combination lock built into the top in order to prevent theft. There's a removable, washable laundry bag, which keeps dirty clothes separate from the clean ones. There's a lifetime warranty, so if anything breaks, they fix it or replace it for you for life. There's a 100-day trial. You can live with it, vibe with it, travel with it, Instagram with it. If at any point you decide it's not for you, you can return it for a full refund and they won't ask you any questions about it. There's free shipping on any Away order within the lower 48 states. Carry-on sizes are all compliant with all major U.S. airlines while maximizing the amount you can pack. I love this thing. I'm so happy they're sponsoring the show because I, of course, got one. And my favorite thing, the thing that I noticed immediately was the 4 360-degree spinning wheels at the bottom. They're extremely smooth, and it makes toting this bad boy around a breeze. And, of course, the included battery is so awesome. It has 2 different charge ports, a 1-amp and a 2.1-amp USB charge port that can fully recharge an iPhone up to 5 times. It's just, they thought of everything. They took a bunch of pain out of the whole travel process. And right now, you can get $20 off a suitcase from Away by visiting awaytravel.com/TIOSS and using the promo code TIOSS during checkout. That's awaytravel.com/TIOSS and use the promo code TIOSS. And we thank them so much for their support of the iOS show. Okay, so with that, let's talk about some iPhone 8 stuff. Again, HomePod firmware gives us some more good stuff. Facial recognition, turns out it seems will work on a flat table. So the phone laying flat on the table, it's going to be able to scan your face and know who you are and be totally fine with that.
So it's a nose pattern recognition.
Yeah, nose hair pattern recognition.
Nose hair pattern recognition.
Yeah.
So stop trimming your nose, people.
Don't do that. You're going to not get in your phone if you do that.
What if you get one of the big Sam Shepard mustaches that looks like you have a push broom on your lip? Is that going to screw it up?
You can't.
No. There's also references for partially obscured faces.
What about if you're Jeff and you, like, it's the winter? Or, like, anybody in winter areas, like the frickin' polar vortex Midwest, and you've got to cover your face, or, you know, otherwise you're going to have to, like, camp out in a tauntaun.
That's going to super suck. And it also doesn't address people have to wear, like, hijabs and stuff, right?
Ooh, yeah. Well,
that's true.
Well, maybe, I don't know. It might work with, I don't know. It's probably, do we know it's facial recognition or is it eyeball recognition?
What we're hearing is facial recognition.
Okay, so maybe
Apple hasn't said anything about that.
So just another area where if they totally remove Touch ID, it's going to suck for some people.
I don't like that. I want my Touch ID. But I think we just have to see. There's also mentions of it potentially working with third-party apps, which makes a lot of sense, especially if Pearl is going to be replacing the whole Touch ID.
Should tell people that Pearl that Michael just referred to is supposedly what the
code
the name for
the, code
the
name.
Facial recognition.
So what they're finding in this HomePod firmware, they're not like scraping through actual code. They're scraping through strings.
Right, reference strings.
Yeah. So these reference strings, and it's for localization, right?
I think it's just a bunch of different things, even like settings and stuff like that.
Well, so for things
property
like
lists and
like localization and property lists. So, but yeah. So Pearl is the code name for facial recognition. So that's good that it's going to work, you know, on a table. That means that our concerns about paying, you know, with Apple Pay at a register, it should work just fine. And you know, if Apple does roll out this facial recognition feature and have it supersede Touch ID, I think that they certainly want to have it work as well, if not better. You know, I guess the concern was whether that would work, and it seems like they may have cracked it, but we'll...
You know, I'm still not buying it. And it's because the number of places that I go around Boulder that have Square, where they have the Touch ID reader, and they're like bolted down with the chip slot facing out, which means that they slope away from you. There are so many of those that...
You mean the Apple Pay reader?
So they have the Apple Pay reader.
It doesn't need to be in full contact with it.
Right.
Yeah, but I found I have to, in most cases, get it parallel at least.
Hmm.
So the I end up with a camera that's facing someone else.
Interesting.
Yeah, well, the references also show Pearl ID being referenced for both the front and rear cameras. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, that's a good point. And that would kind of make sense why it seems like both front and back cameras are going to have the same specs, right?
I don't know if those have the same resolution specs, but supposedly you're supposed to have the same kinds of sensors, so IR 4K. Sensors, laser sensors.
I think we
like
talked
that.
About this. They're both going to be 4K, 60 frames per second.
You think so?
I recall a rumor last time we recorded the show. I don't think you were here for that, actually.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. You weren't with us for that one, Adam.
I thought in this time around, too, they found 4K, yeah, at 60 frames per second. You're right. Yeah. I was thinking the slow-mo is supposedly going to be full HD at 240 frames.
Was it 240 or 120? I don't remember.
Isn't it 120 currently?
That's probably what I'm thinking of.
I think it's 1080p 120 right now, and they're talking about 1080p 240, like super slow-mo.
Yeah. Let's see here. Oh, yeah, so we mentioned the front and back camera. Yeah, authentication for Apple Pay is in there. Work with multiple faces, which is... I can't imagine that's like baselined, that's actually going to be.
I have a feeling that's more about the camera detection. So there's some rumors that because it'll have the facial recognition technology, features like, and I always want to call it faces, but I think it's now called people.
Oh.
Right? In the photo app. So it would be able to real-time detect faces and add that metadata when you're taking photos.
I was thinking more... along the lines of like, maybe it's going to say, make a neutral face, make a happy face, make a frowny face. And then it kind of takes an average of those.
Like the analog of put your thumb this way. Now rotate it around.
Yeah.
Get different angles.
Or the Ola Siri say it different ways.
I think all those things are possible. I mean, a lot of that comes down to what they do software wise, but as far as the underlying technology or the capabilities, yeah, exactly what you're saying. I mean, there's going to be multiple ways that they'll be able to use it. So it's not as much about, or the other thing with multiple faces is maybe we're going to get, you know, I can add my wife's face in there and she can unlock my phone.
Or your favorite police officer's face.
Yep.
Yeah. It's the choice is yours.
Mm-hmm. There are some other indications that the iPhone 8 will mute notification sounds when the user is looking at the screen.
Cool.
That seems reasonable.
Cool.
I don't know what else to say about that.
You seem very nonplussed by that. Good job. Yeah. I mean, I have notification sounds muted always already.
Me too.
So...
Which is why I'm a little like, okay, that's cool.
Yeah. What do you think about the copper gold color?
Depends on the render that I've seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some of them make it look good and some of them make it look not so much.
Yeah, there's a render I saw this last week that is the, you know, the metal surrounded by kind of a layer of glass kind of thing.
Right.
And it looks rich and luxurious, like fine leather. And then there's the, oh, it looks like a copper kettle, which would suck.
I think all versions I've seen, even the copper kettle, they all look good. I think they all look better than the frickin' rose gold.
Yeah.
Yeah, but people love the rose gold.
Yep.
Well, that's one of the big rumors that we're seeing right now, color-wise, is that there are only going to be three colors.
Yep.
So it'd be like the space gray back, the silver back, and the copper back.
Right.
I think it's black, silver, and blush gold is what they're calling that copper color.
Yeah, and you know what? I totally get the why they're calling it blush gold, too. It, like, when you think about it for a moment, that's totally... I think if we were used to putting on makeup, we would get it.
Right. Well, and I think it's probably more in the pink tones than the sort of brown copper tones than we're actually, I think, and once we see it in real life, I think it's going to be like a deeper color version of the rose gold.
Perhaps basically a hybrid between the gold and the rose gold. I like it though.
Yeah.
I think it looks good. So I'm looking forward to that color. I'm going to get a white front phone regardless if I get another one.
Ew.
Michael, you're so weird.
I was kind of hoping all the fronts would be black.
Hmm.
So you like seeing the little sensor bar tab?
I don't care. I just can't find my phone. I have too much black stuff. And like my phone has like disappeared into my desk. I can't find it.
The tab doesn't bother me that much on the white phone, but I like the seamless look on the front.
Yeah, I don't really care. I just don't at all. What else do we have here? Three colors. Foxconn. Yeah, they said that this Foxconn insider believes it's going to be called blush gold. Ming-Chi Kuo believes that mass production is going to begin in mid-September, which is earlier than his previous October prediction. And it's just going to be all three models. So the 7S, 7S Plus, and the 8 are going to be announced simultaneously in September, which is a continuation of the yearly theme, which is it's going to be super delayed. We're not going to see it for, you know, way longer. And then, oh, wait, never mind. They did it. What? Are you okay?
Sorry, I had a technical error. I'm good now.
Okay.
I was going to say, I think the report that I read from him is that he said production is actually happening now for release in September. Announcement and then on sale.
I think the pre-production.
Well, here's the thing. Where I'm going with that is his number prediction for what they would have produced this quarter. So if it does launch this quarter and goes on sale this quarter, which I think it will, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
2 to 4 million phones produced in the quarter.
2 to 4 million available at launch.
Okay. Typical launch weekend numbers, pre-sales, you know, like when they do the pre-sale, from what I remember, and I've kind of went back and looked, it's usually around, again, no one knows for sure because they're just estimates, but the estimates are usually around 12 million to 13 million pre-orders.
Holy balls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's going to be a similar sort of feeling if you go to see the eclipse. And
yes.
By that, I mean a total shit show.
Yes. So I just want to set people's expectations. Like if I am fully believing that I may not see a phone
this year.
Correct.
Yeah.
I'm preparing myself for that inevitability, which is going to totally suck. And I'm going to be really bummed out about it. But I mean, if you thought AirPods were hard to get a hold of, now the good news is he's also saying by the end of the year, they will have produced, I think, about 50, 60 million phones. So the ramp up after is going to supposedly go very quickly. So things will probably or hopefully get better October, November, December. And that may be where the rumors are coming from with the sort of launch schedule. Like November, it's going to be okay, but in September, it's going to totally suck.
That wouldn't be so bad. Well, it would suck, but it wouldn't be so bad.
Nope, it wouldn't.
I mean, if they can ramp up that quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think your chances of getting a Model 3, a Tesla Model 3, are probably better at this point.
Wow.
No, that's not true. It's you're waiting until like 2019 if you order one right now.
Well, that doesn't surprise me at all on the Tesla thing. I don't know why anybody would buy anything other than a Tesla Model 3 if they're looking for an electric vehicle in the same price range.
Okay, so the reason you would... Are you saying anything other than a Tesla or a Tesla Model 3? Because
a Tesla Model 3.
Because the thing is, if you want the dank battery and, you know, the good options and stuff, you're getting into that like Model S territory.
No, I'm talking about a $35,000 electric vehicle that has better than 150 mile range.
Yeah, 200.
Well, that's like the Tesla. But what I'm saying is they're competitors. So we're totally digressing into this. But both Nissan and Ford have options in that exact same price range, but they're not nearly as good. So why, other than I can't wait until 2019 to get like the car I want, would you buy something else?
I don't know. Let's see. Stephen Trotton Smith.
Now that's the guy to watch for leaks.
Because he's good at digging in that software.
And the new guy. I like the new guy better. Just because of his name.
Who's the new guy?
Guillerme Rambo.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
So he has found... based on his digging, that there is going to be a high contrast, resizable home button indicator in a specialized function area reserved for the home button, potentially other items, and likely disappear during full screen content like video. So it may be like the whole bottom bar, the whole bottom portion of the phone is like a home button, unless there's a special menu that pops up and then it's going to resize. There's also no API for it. So it seems like this high contrast idea, it means that, you know, the developers can't change the color. It's all going to be based on Apple's figuring stuff out. And I would guess that this is based on their experience with showing you the clock on the home screen with, you know, pretty much any background, because as you remember, there used to be these two big bars at the top and the bottom to ensure that you could see the clock. And now that you can put any background you want, they have to be pretty mindful of your background in order to give you a good high contrast view of that information. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad they're taking care of it. They're not letting developers screw with it. Thank goodness, because developers are no good. I didn't mean it that way, but it did come out fun.
What's your email address again, Michael?
jgamut@macobserver.com.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I think that one will bounce.
Is it? What's your email address?
It's jeffg@macobserver.com.
That's my email address. That's right.
That's Michael's email address.
Okay. And then last but not least, speaking of Weibo, I forget what we decided on, but I'm going to say Weibo.
I'm going to say Weibo just to be contrary to you.
Because it doesn't fall down.
All right.
That's right.
There are some images posted on Weibo that claim to show the wireless charging pad components for the iPhone 8.
Ooh.
And it's pretty interesting. So if it is wireless charging components, I'm looking at it, and based on what I know about electromagnetic induction, mm-hmm. It's an interesting design. I haven't really looked at these things. I would expect it to be symmetrical, but I'm guessing that you can only put it on the charger in one orientation for it to work. And I'm also going to guess that it's proprietary, so you can't go to like Starbucks and plug it down.
They'll do the same thing they did with the Apple Watch, where it's based on the Qi standard, but it's a tweaked version of it.
You know, doing it where the phone has to sit in one specific orientation seems kind of lame.
Well, I mean, it's going to work every time because there's going to be magnets that orient it.
Right.
But
just like the Apple Watch.
Yeah. Which well, I can set my Apple Watch in any orientation on the thing. So it doesn't matter if my band is parallel to the cord or perpendicular.
Ooh. Here's something. What if just inside the little charging puck, it magnetically rotates itself?
Whoa.
That would be cool.
Right? You could just do that. You get it in the right area, and the magnets could pull it into, you know, if it just spins inside there.
I like that idea.
Correct orientation.
I like that a lot.
You should work at Apple. You should bring those ideas to Mr. Cook.
Right. So then they can put it anywhere they want in the back of the phone, and the charger part will take care of itself. So it's easy to get around these things.
Cool. All right. So with that, what are we doing? Oh, picks? Yeah. Let's do our picks.
Uh-oh.
I have a pick.
Okay.
Jeff, do you have a pick?
Sure.
All right, go.
Okay, my pick is Real VNC.
Oh.
Yeah.
Old school. Okay, has been around for decades.
I know, but here's why it's my pick. It's because I was recently helping someone get VNC working on the Raspberry Pi.
Okay.
And the most reliable way to get it working was to use Real VNC and the VNC Viewer app on iOS. And you can use the VNC Viewer app with other VNC services, but it's the one from Real VNC. So it worked awesome, and now I know someone that's controlling their Raspberry Pi from an iPad or an iPhone, and it's as if they live in the future. And
well,
it's free.
I'll add on to that, because I know that at JPL for their simulation so for commanding the rover, they want to be able to like make sure that actually works before they send it to Mars and stuff. Seems a little reasonable. So they have did you know that the MSL and pretty much every other space platform runs on PowerPC?
Yes. Isn't that awesome?
The newest rover that they're sending to Mars is going to be a PowerPC G3, which is crazy. So they've got an emulator running on some Intel box, I believe. But in order to work with it, they use Real VNC.
That's really
to
cool.
Bring up their big old Space Command console for doing testing. They use VNC. Real VNC, the actual app Real VNC. So
you like it mostly because of the light footprint? Is that kind of the thing, or
probably just because it works, right?
Yeah, for me it's that it sets up easy and reliably and it just works. Other VNC clients that I've used specifically in the Raspberry Pi space have been unreliable.
Oh, I'm with you there on the Raspberry Pi side. I like screens.
I like screens as well. I never VNC nice into my Raspberry Pi, though. I was just SSH.
I do it all the time. Well, I do both. I SSH more, but being able to VNC into it is nice as well. Hmm.
Cool. I mostly have
especially
to do it.
Now that they have their new GUI.
GUI.
Yeah.
Yep. Cool.
Adam.
All right. I'm going to pick something that is more for gamers, I guess, but I think I'm seeing more and more people use this. Do you guys know about Discord?
Yeah, I've heard of it. It's a I don't know. What is it? Tell me.
It's kind of like a Slack style application where you can do chat and you have channels and you can do voice chat now and also now video chat. What's kind of cool about the voice chat thing is you can go in to a channel, set up a voice chat, and you can just be sitting there, and then anybody who comes in later can just actually join that voice chat. So again, it's kind of targeted at gamers. I think it has some integration with Twitch. It now also has integration with Patreon. So I kind of got it through some of the podcasts that I support through Patreon are starting to use it as a community benefit, because when you reach or sign up for a certain level, you can tie it in, you can tie in access to Patreon. And I'm a huge Slack fan, but I think I like the UI and sort of the experience inside Discord better. And they have apps for both Android and iOS and the Mac and Windows. And it's kind of neat. So the way I kind of got into it is a friend of mine has set up a Minecraft server, and we've started kind of hanging out and playing Minecraft in there. And he has a Discord. And so I've been playing around with that. So it's cool. It's worth checking out, especially if you're into gaming or if you're looking for something for maybe your club or your organization to kind of have a place, you know, a la Slack to go to. And I don't think it has, I think it's all free as far as I know. I don't know if there's like limitations like Slack for their free accounts. I know once you get past like 10,000 messages, it starts, it doesn't let you retain that history. And I don't know if Discord has those limitations or not.
I don't know.
But Discord also just did add for some users that they're doing a beta of video stuff. So they're just kind of interesting to watch. It's interesting to watch. And for me, they kind of came out of nowhere. I don't know how long they've been around. But I'm seeing a lot more people using it. And it seems like a nice service. And like I said, it's free. And the app is pretty nice. And I'm enjoying it. So check out Discord if you're looking for that sort of thing.
Cool. So my pick is going to be Soylent.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Okay, Adam. Or Michael, why?
Because it's just... So I've been using Soylent for several years.
I know. I think you picked it before.
Okay. Well, I'm going to pick it again because it seems to have, like, this year just suddenly become very popular. I'm one of two people in my household right now regularly consuming Soylent. And I pretty much do it every day for breakfast and lunch. And, you know, I eat food for dinner. And it's interesting. There are people who are totally fine with it. And there are people who are just like, they will bite your head off and be like, you're insane. You're not a human for drinking this stuff. And I think that the reason I like Soylent is because they're, you know, your body needs food. Your body needs, you know, vitamins and minerals and calories, you know, all throughout the day.
Right.
But like, there's so much time taken up by either preparing super good stuff or, you know, grabbing not so good stuff. And then you have to deal with having it or buying it. And there are most of these times, particularly breakfast and lunch, those are the times where it's like, I need to get to work or I'm busy doing stuff. I don't want to be bothered with this. As much as I like eating food and preparing food, I don't want to be forced to do it three times a day for the rest of my life. So it makes me, I think, enjoy eating and cooking more when I do it, like for dinner or on the weekends and that sort of thing. So I think it's made my life less complicated. I spend less money, and the best thing is I know that I'm getting all the nutrients I need, because it's hard to do, especially for those on the go situations. So, I actually don't drink the like name brand Soylent. I do the, so it's open source, right? And there are people who fork it. And there's a guy who has forked it into a ketogenic version. So I go with the keto version. Mm-hmm. And I've been making my own, like buying powders from Amazon for several years now. But I just recently ordered his, it's called Keto Chow 2.0. This is not an official review of it because I have not gotten it yet. But I decided to just get the full like pre-mix, like here are the bags instead of having to, you know, spend 20 minutes every couple days, you know, mixing powders. So now it's like, you just get a bag, you scoop it in, you got your keto chow. So Soylent, I like it. Consider it.
Cool.
But you guys all have these, you guys have these fancy internet jobs where you can like spend time cooking at home.
Where you spend time cooking at home. I have a wonderful, awesome wife who handles most of that for me.
Yeah, so there's that. So for the bachelors out there who don't have awesome significant others making food for them, Soylent.
Yep. I'm in charge of the grilling, but everything else is kind of her territory.
Cool.
That was kind of the deal.
That was the agreement you signed?
Mm-hmm. Before people think I'm all like backwards and gorilla, it was... I
don't think anybody's judging you.
I do the money. She does the other side of things. So, and I know it sounds old school, but it's what works for us.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
So Soylent, it's great. With that, you can find our picks in the show notes at theiosshow.com. You can review the show in iTunes, tell a friend, rate the show, do all that stuff. Send your feedback to feedback@theiosshow.com. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Adam Christensen is at the Mattcast, mattcast.com, at Mattcast on Twitter. Thank you for being here, Adam.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, MacObserver.com, the TMO Daily Observations podcast that comes out every week, and maybe even today. I don't know. You're going to the eclipse.
It's already out today.
Nice. And he's at Jay Gamet on Twitter. Thanks for being here, Jeff.
It's always awesome.
And I am at Michael Johnston on Twitter. And with that, we'll see you next time on the iOS show.
We represent the Lollipop Guild, the Lollipop Guild, the Lollipop Guild.
Oh my gosh.
Let's just do a whole show like this.
How are we going to communicate this? The stylus. We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus.